It is Bloomberg on the economy. I'm Tom Keene from Palo Alto, California and Stanford University. With us in celebration of Paul Volcker, the inaugural winner of the Stanford Institute for Economic Policy Research Award, John Taylor, Raymond Professor of Economics at Stanford, of course, the former Undersecretary of Treasury. What a big evening for really for all of Stanford. How did you drag Paul Volcker out here? It wasn't just about an award, though. You had to get him out here. How did you get him out here?
Well, the award's awfully important. Really, really great that he's taken this award. It's really well-deserved. But he's come out here before. You know, he's been helpful to us in many ways. In fact, he participated in a conference we did last December on this idea of how do you end bailouts. And that's where he put some of his proposals through.
Are we any smarter about ending bailouts?
I think we are, actually. I think you know, since the bailouts of 2008, I think there's some ways to prevent them. Unfortunately, I think policymakers aren't there yet with implementing them. So, for example, there's an idea of something called a Chapter 11F, which a financial firm could go through, keep the money flowing, but at the same time fail if it need to. And that's it's an innovation. People are working on it. But in the meantime, of course, the Europeans have proceeded to move in the bailout direction.
Let's talk about reform first and bailouts, and then we'll go to Europe here. John Taylor with us, folks at Stanford. You have a blog. You're trying to catch up with that upstart Mankiw over at Harvard. Economics One, a blog by John B. Taylor. Are you having fun doing a blog?
Yeah, I am. I think it gives a chance to say some things a little more detailed than you would in an op-ed. It helps students think about relating the subject of economics to the real world. Gives me a chance to talk about some things that I think are important, but it's not other outlets for it.
You mentioned Tom Jackson of the University of Rochester in ending government bailouts as we know them. What is a Chapter 11F, and why should our listeners care?
Well, they should care because it's a way to end the bailouts. What Chapter 11F does, and the F is for financial institutions, is allow perhaps even a large non-bank financial institution like Lehman go through bankruptcy without causing all the chaos that occurred after Lehman in September 2008. So you set up a panel of expert judges who know the financial system. You lay out a plan in advance of what would happen if the institution got into trouble. You have the opportunity for the government, if necessary, to initiate a petition rather than wait for the company itself. So it really it makes the bankruptcy process much more predictable, adds certainty to this, so you don't have the chaos that you saw in 2008.
Why are we afraid of bankruptcy? Wollaston or Skeel at Pennsylvania will bring this up. There seems to be this just every political effort to avoid it. Why are we afraid of it this time? I asked the same question of Paul Volcker. Why are we afraid of crisis and going out of business? They used to do it with great style in the 19th century.
Well, you know, it's the term is scary to some people, but after all, bankruptcy occurs a lot, and frequently you don't even notice. Customers don't notice. United Airlines keeps flying the planes in bankruptcy. You have Kmart in bankruptcy, people still go buy their items. You have various kinds of things, and that's what should happen. It's natural. Financial institutions, we are a little more worried, and in these cases, you have the possibility of spillover to the economy, restriction of credit if a financial institution goes through bankruptcy. But the same thing can happen for a financial institution that happens for United Airlines and Kmart, and that is the money can keep flowing, business can keep being conducted, but you need to add the predictability and the knowledge of what it would be like in that circumstance. So that's what Chapter 11S tries to do.
The market tries to give knowledge. The markets in Europe are fragile. What is the Taylor prescription for this inability to restructure in Europe?
Well, I think the first prescription is find a way to restructure the debt of some of the countries that have increased their debt so much. And I think Greece in particular, it's quite possible to have a restructuring, an orderly restructuring. It's going to most likely have to happen anyway. So the providing the funds now kind of delays that. It doesn't deal with the solvency issues that are out there. So my prescription would be to find a way, which I think is pretty clear at this point, to have an orderly restructuring of the debt and to shy away from these large bailouts. I'm particularly concerned about the ECB being involved in this bailout because it raises questions about the credibility of that central bank.
I sided with Chairman Volcker, the Ken Rogoff 1985 paper on credibility. How do you invent credibility?
Well, you don't invent credibility, you earn credibility. Over time, the ECB, I think, has done a terrific job of earning credibility in the 10-plus years since it was created. It followed a policy of keeping inflation low. It was transparent, so it earned that credibility, but now there's unfortunately some questions about losing it as it moves into areas which are not normally considered a monetary policy.
Are you optimistic about some form of new fiscal method in Europe? I mean, it's such an original experiment. We talk now in different op-eds about some form of overview of fiscal policy of these different nations. Is that in any of your textbooks?
Well, of course, overview is a matter of transparency and accountability. But for one country to overlook another, I think it raises a lot of questions. I think it's probably better. You know, they had this Stability and Growth Pact, which they were not supposed to have their budget deficits get too big. It wasn't that there wasn't accountability. They just blew right through them. Most of the countries blew right through them. So here it's again, another aspect of credibility. In this case, credibility of fiscal policy, adhering to some reasonable policies and reasonable rules. I think that we're now in a situation where around the world, people are recognizing the danger of this debt and deficits, that we have a reasonable chance of addressing the problem.
Have you seen the new fiscal monitor from the IMF? Have you had a chance to glance at it?
No, I haven't.
They just put it out 3 or 4 days ago, Carlo Cottarelli, excuse me, under Olivier Blanchard, and it is just numbing to look at the 91 pages and the idea of, we've got to stop building the debt and then we've got to turn the ship around and bring debt to GDP back. How do you apply monetary theory in a time where you have this fiscal overlay country after country? Does a Taylor rule work when you have a fiscal situation as we have?
Sure, the Taylor rule will work, but the Taylor rule focuses on monetary policy. In fact, you really need to have a Taylor rule to prevent the central banks from basically creating a lot of money in support of the debt, if you like. Monetizing the debt is the technical word people use, but the problem is fiscal. And what you hope is that large fiscal debt doesn't become monetized, but in the meantime, addressing the debt is the thing that just must be done. And it is, the numbers and the charts are scary, and I think people are beginning to see that. You see a grassroots movement here in the United States that shows its concern about that, so I think that's promising.
You've been, and correct me if I'm wrong, graphically scathing on stimulus. You've said, look, here we have stimulus, and here's the actual math, folks. It's working a bit, but essentially way overrated. If it's overrated, is the solution something like a VAT tax? I mean, if we assume some raising of taxes, is that the best tax?
I don't think that the problem is taxes, quite frankly. If you look at the charts, probably look carefully at the IMF numbers you're referring to, almost all of the increases in debt and deficits are coming from spending. I mean, those are the facts.
That is what the report says, folks, just so you know. So if we're going to reduce spending, how do you go about that?
Well, you have to start with entitlements, I think. Some of the entitlement growth is projected to go even further up, so it's mainly reducing the growth rate of I think the programs that like Social Security and Medicare, Medicaid in the United States. It's really, the arithmetic isn't hard, especially with Social Security. The politics is what's so hard. And your question must be about politics. How do you get the political support to do it? And I would go back to this, I think, grassroots concern you're hearing out in many quarters that we need to deal with the problem.
We are in Palo Alto. We are not far from Sacramento. You have been involved in the challenges of California. My latest number in my head was it was $20 billion, and they moved $2 billion from account A to account B, and so it's $18 billion. Tell us about working with a given state, in this case California, just in 30 seconds here before we let you go.
Sure.
What's going to happen with California?
Well, we got into this situation in California because when revenues were rising, we spent a lot more. And those represented commitments that had to be maintained when revenues dropped off. It's a classic thing. You spend a lot when revenues are growing, and then it causes problems when revenues go down. And so that's the thing that needs to be happening in the future, is find a way not to overspend when the revenues are coming in, but rather to keep the growth rate of spending constant. Mm-hmm. I think that's the key.
Thank you so much for stopping by. I know you've got a very busy schedule. John Taylor here, folks, as we are in Palo Alto, and certainly John Taylor in celebration of the inaugural Sieper Prize given to Paul Volcker. Coming up, John Chauvin of Stanford. From Palo Alto, it's Bloomberg on the Economy.